partnership between WCC Radio and the Star Tribune editorial board. John Rash and DJ Tice are here. Okay, let's start, John, with you and the news of the last 25 minutes. On the floor of the Senate, Mitt Romney, the senator from Utah, says on one of the counts, the abuse of power, he is voting to convict the president in his impeachment trial. How significant is this for Mitt Romney, for the president, and the Republican Party?
A remarkable Republican exception to what has been happening in the United States Senate, which is moving towards a quick acquittal. And not only that, many members parroting President Trump's line that it was a perfect call or a near-perfect call, or those who won't verbally rebuke him or say that they disapprove of what he did, but they think that impeachment went too far. The president fired back at some of those senators this morning, calling it again a perfect call. So this is quite significant. Senator Romney certainly wasn't popular among core conservatives who make up groups like CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, which made a virtue of putting an ad out that he was uninvited for their upcoming convention here. This will only solidify the split. But I certainly think that in the moment and as history goes on, this will be something he will be remembered for. He seemed to have that in mind as he made this decision. And I think that the call will look like the right one as years go on.
Yeah, I think significant most of all for Romney himself and his legacy. I said to John on the way over that he's added a line to that first paragraph in his obit. His speech was certainly, you know, heartfelt and eloquent. It seemed very much as if he had struggled with the decision.
Yep.
And he didn't fault anyone for disagreeing with him. He credited all of them with being sincere and thoughtful and driven by conscience in their decision, which maybe a lot of people are going to think is over generous one way or the other.
Yeah.
But he wasn't out to pass judgment on his colleagues, but you know, clearly to call it the way he saw it.
And Doug, I know we expect the president to handle this respectfully, look at Mitt Romney and say, you know, this is what the responsibilities are when you're a senator. You get to handle things the way you would like, and our relationship still would be a very professional and courteous going forward.
Well, that's the kind of class and grace that we've come to expect from our former president. No, I think we can probably count on the president for some flaming tweets.
Yes.
And probably revisiting some of the unpleasant stories he's told about Romney in the past, Romney seeking his endorsement back in 2012,
crawling
and begging. On the other hand, I'm kind of wondering if Joe Biden now will apologize for the going to keep you all in chains line, which you may recall from 2012. Memorable lines that he fired at Mitt Romney.
That's right.
In one of the lively crossfires there. Romney, I dare say, was a fair bit more generous to the former vice president.
Yes, he was. Donald Trump Jr. is already calling through Twitter in the last 3 minutes that Mitt Romney should be expelled from the GOP. How do you expect the rest of the senators who are Republicans to react to Romney? Will it just be the divide of the more passionate Trump supporters will be more vehement in their disagreement, or will almost all of them just try to move on and get past this and feel like that the president and the party are better when we're focusing on what's coming up next as opposed to this?
Even his staunchest supporters in the Senate didn't want the president to bring up impeachment in the State of the Union address last night. They clearly want to move on. It's an election year for the nation, if not for their individual states, although a third of them will be up for election or re-election as we continue on in 2020 here. So he seems to be a really collegial member of the Senate, someone whom all of them supported when he ran for president. I think that the way that he framed it in terms of not going after his fellow senators but talking about his own individual conscience will help him with his colleagues from that perspective. I think also attention will clearly shift towards Senator Joe Manchin among maybe a few others, Kyrsten Sinema out of Arizona, Democrats, more moderate from more red states who have not announced the direction that they're going to go regarding acquittal. And I think that Senator Romney's words and how well he seemingly spoke them might influence them as well.
I do think that that Romney's not passing any judgments on anybody else's actions and decisions on this will go a long way. Also, they have a vested interest in moving together as a caucus, both, you know, on the business that they may face in the months ahead, but also on the election campaign. Yep. And so I would expect Mitch McConnell and others publicly, at least, you know, to be respectful and supportive of Romney's good standing in the Republican Party.
Gentlemen, we like to keep score. We like to look and say, after something happened, who has benefited more? You at times had Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and other Democrats in 2019 who were reluctant to jump into the impeachment fight. And in the end, those two in particular jumped in the deep end, and it certainly passed in the House. They tried vigorously in the Senate. I thought they made a very good case on why John Bolton and others should have been called as witnesses. But in the end, the president will be acquitted. He has come out of this with his highest approval ratings in Gallup at 49%. Seems like that's still not that high, but it's the highest he's had through the entirety, John, of his presidency. If you had to say right now which side has benefited more, the Democrats who wanted to impeach the president or the president, I think it's the president. And I think it's notably the president. Where do you think it stands between the two?
It's Congress's constitutional duty to hold the executive branch accountable. So in the end, if they're responsible office holders, in our Speaker Pelosi certainly among those, they had to decide, you know, whether they were going to adhere to that duty and wherever the politics fell. Certainly the president's numbers have come up in terms of approval, but I think that in the long view, considering his behavior, that the Democrats might have looked even worse, especially to their core voters, that they weren't willing to stand up for principle and for what they believe is the right and dutiful thing to do as elected office holders. So I think that politically it may be a draw, but certainly in terms of what they are elected to do, the Democrats do come out slightly ahead.
I agree with you, Chad. I hope that they did it because they thought it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I'll take them at their word that that's why they did it, because politically I don't think it made any sense for them. And, you know, the outcome was the most surprising thing since the sun came up in the east this morning. Mm. And we've known that for months, and they didn't really seem to have a strategy for dealing with that. So I think politically it's been a pratfall for the Democrats, but they did get the president's behavior publicly exposed.
Yep.
And discussed, and from the standpoint of the nation's well-being, that may justify the whole ordeal, but politically, I think you're right.
On to the State of the Union and the fiasco that was Monday night in Iowa. Back with John and Doug in a matter of moments. The State of the Union takes place last night, where the president gets a massive audience. He gets all members of Congress in one room. He gets to put it together how he would like, Doug. He is starting his reelection, right? And, you know, we're looking at...
Starting?
Yeah. Well, I suppose he started November 6, 2016 at about 1:30 as he was winning. You're 100% right there. But, you know, we've watched Clinton two terms. We've watched Bush two terms and Obama two terms. And I think if we look back at the speeches they gave, there would be a lot to their base at that time, you know, patting themselves on the back. Donald Trump is never, ever going to be shy in appealing to his base, in bragging about what he's done. What stood out the most to you about the presentation last night?
Well, you know, Trump is a politician just like any other politician, only more so, way more so. Yes, the politicking, the boasting, the shots at the other side and the previous administration, it's all routine. Trump just does it with a little more pugnacity and bombast, and that was certainly there. The most bizarre element was the way he has expanded the hero in the audience routine. And now it's, we've got 15 special guests, and they all, many of them at least, you know, get prizes.
Yeah.
Or some kind of award ceremony. We had the little girl who got the scholarship award. We had the Tuskegee Airman who had just been promoted to Brigadier General that day.
And his great-grandson right there.
With the grandson, we had Rush Limbaugh get his Medal of Freedom. And then, of course, we had the surprise family reunion.
Yep.
You know, I can understand why Nancy Pelosi ripped up the speech in disgust at the end. She hadn't won anything.
Yeah.
In the
she kept
show,
waiting. Wait a
second.
What am I going to get?
I was expecting him to, you know, roll out a new car for somebody at some point. You know, so it really was just, a circus show. And yet you got to admit it's compelling and entertaining and unlike any other State of the Union address. That said, you know, he talked for an hour and a half.
Yep.
Certainly touched on a lot of boasting points, about half of which are true, and a lot of proposals as well. Although he certainly gave us very little substance or meat
going
on on those bones, but. You know, the showmanship, I think, is the thing that stands out.
John, as it ends, Nancy Pelosi takes the speech and rips it up, and the Republicans are apoplectic. How can you do this to our norms, to our protocols, to the respect? And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Donald Trump goes to the shredder with norms and decorum and classic Washington, D.C. every single day. Now, normally Pelosi has stayed above that. She also didn't introduce the president the normal way. She was greeted with a standing ovation today by the Democrats. Along with the speech, what was your view on how Pelosi played this out, including with plenty of gesticulation and reactions behind the president the entire time?
Michelle Obama quite rightly went forward with, they go low, we go high, and that was a very effective slogan and practice for the Democrats, and it made them able to blunt and not get deeper into the mud with Republican counterparts. And so it was an unforced error of Speaker Pelosi to do that, because that's the optic that so many take from her. And as opposed to her looking like a principled constitutionalist regarding impeachment, it looks more political, and it undercuts her case of bringing this through the House and then ultimately having it moved to a trial in the Senate. That said, you're quite right. There's a lack of decorum on both sides. Certainly the president has broken nearly every norm that exists. And so there's a high degree of hypocrisy when you have Republicans who are inflamed by this kind of behavior. But that doesn't mean that the Speaker of the House should have done that. I think that she's best serves the country if she sticks to her principles and reacts with grace and class, and I think that was not her best moment.
You know, she was doing a lot of seemingly like talking to herself behind the president.
And at times talking to Pence,
right?
like he was going to go, yeah,
but
you're right.
I came to realize that, you know, she's just praying for him while she's there, as she's assured us she does daily.
Yes.
And she had to do like a whole rosary, you know.
Yeah,
doing,
she
had time. But no, I think she needs to remember the lesson that Jeb Bush and Rubio and Ted Cruz and they all should have taught their fellow politicians, that you can't beat this guy at that game. You can't beat him at the trash-talking game. So
he's better at it.
You shouldn't play it.
He's better at it. Okay, John, on to Iowa. Old people on an app, not enough people having phones availability. an app that a lot of people were saying days before it's not going to work and it's a fiasco. We still don't have the final results. We're sitting here at 1:54 on a Wednesday. Does Iowa even matter at this point? If it stays the same and Bernie gets the most votes, but Buttigieg gets the most delegates, have we already missed the window when any sort of bounce and ability to build off that, has that ended? Or is it still somewhat relevant at some point?
It matters for all the wrong reasons. Here you have candidates who are calling for all the way up to a revolution in terms of changing how the American economy and society work, and they can't even get a caucus election to work in a medium-sized Midwestern state. And that sends a message not just to voters in that state, within the region, around the country, but internationally. People are watching this as well. President Trump is the most consequential leader in the world, as every U.S. president is. His reelection is a key issue in countries spanning the globe. They're looking to see who's going to be the candidate to take him on, and this is what they see happening. So it's an embarrassment for the party, but for the nation as well. And it really does obscure the work that many people, candidates of course, but also so many of their volunteers put in for a year and sometimes even beyond that.
Right.
And a remarkable outcome, regardless of one's politics. This is a state that was known for the historic vote that launched President Obama and to become the first African-American president of the United States. Regardless of what happens with his electoral fortunes, a once totally obscure mayor of South Bend, Indiana, a 37-year-old man, veteran, who's openly the first openly gay candidate, wins the Iowa caucus, which is an extraordinary story that now is on about page 5B in the New York Times. It's amazing. And so on to New Hampshire, and we'll see what happens there.
The murkiness resulting from this another pratfall, you know, it's a bad break for Buttigieg, certainly undermining his victory there, but it's a great gift to Joe Biden, who had a terrible night, and it all gets a little bit obscured by this.
Watered down.
And gives him another chance, though he's going to need to show something significant to live up to his front runner status.
Why do we think he's going
real
to
quick? I actually am not at all convinced that he is, and I've never thought that he was as good a candidate as people thought. But, you know, his pitch that he's the electable candidate is going to wear pretty thin pretty fast. I'm the one who can beat Trump if you can't even beat Buttigieg or Warren or hardly Klobuchar.
Yeah, and okay, so speaking of Klobuchar, we got about 90 seconds left total here. John, you first. How should she take this? In behind the scenes, how should she assess this?
That she has done extraordinarily well considering that she stayed in the race, did better than senators from big states, Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, and many others. And yet she did finish fifth. If she doesn't do much better in New Hampshire, the resources will be depleted, and she doesn't want to come to her home state on Super Tuesday and lose an election in a state where she has the claim to fame of doing extraordinarily well throughout Minnesota. So she'll really have to reassess it at that point.
Do you think it's an automatic, Doug, that she runs here? If she doesn't fare very well in New Hampshire, she's not building much traction in South Carolina and Nevada. Could she get out by Minnesota?
Yes, I think I could foresee that happening. You know, I have thought for some time that Klobuchar's realistic strategy in all of this is probably to run for either next time or a spot on the ticket like vice president or some other kind of job, not really for the top job. And she could, after New Hampshire and maybe another primary or two, decide to get out of somebody's way, endorse them in Minnesota, and you know hope that she might find a spot in there on their team.
Gents, great as always. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Playing Politics with the Star Tribune editorial board. Your Lindis Construction time check is 1:58. Time to call for a free estimate on Infinity from Marvin Windows.